Following program has adult language and plenty of spoilers. Listener, be advised.
Mr. Fix-It.
Diabolu Frank. So you watched Arrow ever?
No, I've seen a couple episodes.
Okay,
I haven't really kept up with it.
Do you know what you watched? Like the crossovers with the Flash, I assume though.
Yeah, I'm still not sure how they met, but you had to watch, the last time I watched it, you watched Flash, you had to watch Arrow to complete the story, I think.
Well, they introduced Barry Allen in the Arrow TV show before he had his own
series.
Oh,
really? I didn't know
that. Yeah, that's where he got his powers in the Arrow series.
Well, Arrow's just weird, dude, because like, there's an island, and I think it's a prison, and I think he's mystical. I don't know.
Okay, before we even get started on that, what do you know about Green Arrow? Like, have you ever read Ollie Green Arrow
Quinn.
Comics? Ollie Quinn?
Or what is this?
Is he like a host on MTV's Remote Control or something?
Name. Oh, dude, I think I read the only Green Arrow I've ever read, I believe, was the Kevin Smith's run.
Okay. How much? Do you like the entire run, though?
I can't remember. It's been so long. Dude, I read it
all that
floppy.
Shit where Stanley and his monster ended up being like a real demon. And
yeah, I think
like
so.
Stanley was getting like molested by his sorcerer grandfather or some shit like that.
I think I vaguely remember that.
Okay. So you really don't know anything about Green Arrow.
No, that's it.
Oh, outside of cartoons, I assume, right?
And Speedy was a heroin addict.
Yeah, you remember that?
Well, no, because they always talked about it in the cover of Speedy's a junkie. I think they even alluded that on Young Justice.
He was a junkie on Young Justice even?
No, but they kind
of recovered?
Alluded, kind of, yeah. Like, there's something wrong with him. But I can't remember.
I kind of like whenever I'd see the design of the character for that show, he always looked kind of severe for Speedy. And that would make sense if he were a recovering addict and that was a reflection of that.
I just always wondered if Speedy had, like, track marks between his toes.
He would have to. He was a heroin addict. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, was
it's
he...
It's not like he was just lighting up a spliff while playing with Great Toad or whatever the hell his band was called.
No, but
he literally had shot up in his arms and said.
But I always wondered if he was smart and he did it like between his toes, so like you couldn't tell. Because I don't.
Not on the cover of Green Arrow, Green Lantern. No,
like he's in there. You see him like you know picking between his toes to see where he's going to shoot up. I just can't picture Speedy like dozed out with a needle hanging out of his arm, leaning up against the wall.
When they caught him in that special issue, he had not been the sidekick for a while. I think he had just stopped being a sidekick and was playing with his band and stuff. So he didn't have to necessarily cover it up.
One thing I always liked about DC was the characters seem to age.
Like, well, you know, that's part of a big thing with Rebirth. Have you heard anything about Rebirth?
God, no. I know it's another reboot of a reboot of a reboot.
From what I can tell, there's not a lot of information out yet, but from what I can tell, it's a deboot. I think what they're talking about doing, because they've already announced, basically they're canceling everything that's out right now, with the exception of Action Detective Comics. They're going to go Marvel style and return to legacy numbering, and they're going to count all the 52 issues, but they're going to start up where those two titles, Action and Detective, left off. Also, on many of the Superman and Batman books, they're going to go bi-weekly on those. And everything's going to be a new number one, but everything's before they go to number one, they're going to do like a rebirth.
Oh,
and so
God.
It's going to be Batman Rebirth number one. You know, because remember Geoff Johns, the big thing was he did Rebirth on Green Lantern, and that was big, and The Flash. So now he's going to do DC Universe.
Let's all remember now, his rebirth was basically setting up so that he could take Alan Moore's little story and create a, what, two-year odyssey?
Not even longer than that.
Was it?
Yeah.
Because I remember Rebirth.
Because, I mean, Blackest Night tied into that.
I like Green Lantern. Green Lantern is one of my favorite DC characters next to The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Geoff Johns. He's a good writer. But his fucking great. It was okay. I read him, the floppies. I didn't really get excited until he did the Blackest Night kind of art. Well, actually, when
Blackest Night was
War.
Good.
Sinestro War was actually really good. I actually would want to own that. I enjoyed that. But to do a reboot and say, oh, well, he rebooted Green Lantern. Yeah, read the first 20 issues. It's all right.
Count Dracula said he liked the first year better than any of the rest of the stuff that came out.
That was a shock.
The Manhunter core and all that. So he lost interest after too many cores got introduced and it got involved mythology.
That actually made it more interesting to me because if you think about it, they're intergalactic cops. And there's only green rings. And so Alan Moore's cool concept of, well, you know, your ring's going to fail one day. And actually your masters or your bosses are actually slave masters of the universe. And you don't understand like how, you know, the evil, that power corrupted them at one time. And so that was kind of a cool, I remember reading that and like, dude, this is really dark. Kevin O'Neill's artwork for, what were they, the Damned or I can't remember, from Sector 666 or whatever.
Okay.
It was really dark. It's been a long time since I read it, but I remember I enjoyed it.
It's from one of the annuals, right?
Yeah, but that's where Alan Moore he did some great stories on that one. Like, what was the name of the planet?
Mogo.
Mogo.
Yeah. Mogo Don't Socialize.
Yeah, that was. I actually owned the.
I wasn't because Dave Gibbons drew that one, and given its reputation, I think that once you know how it ends, it just doesn't work. I tried to read it after knowing what Mogo was. Okay, you've ruined the punchline.
Watch the animated one. It's cute.
Okay,
animated one was cute. They captured the story pretty well.
The one I always really liked with Cap Matui and Bill Willingham drew it, and it's the one where they sent Cap Matui to recruit aliens from a previously unrepresented sector. But the problem was they couldn't.
I believe that's an Alan Moore story, too.
It was an Alan Moore story. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they don't make sound.
Yeah, they don't. They're blind. They don't have any concept of color or light because they're blind and they live in absolute darkness.
It's like sound, right?
So Cap Matui had to explain to the Guardians of the Universe that, yes, she got a protector for the sector, but she did not find a green lantern because she couldn't explain the concept of a green lantern to the aliens. So I got that annual when it came out at I think Walden Books. I always just loved that, like, what would you do under the circumstances? When I love Alan Moore, because I often don't, I really think that Alan Moore gets way more praise than he's deserved.
Hold your tongue, boy.
Sorry. But
you blow Layfield. I'm shocked. Go ahead, man. Finish up.
Well, his contribution to the industry. And I think that a lot of what Alan Moore contributed to the industry has been very harmful, actually. I think that he contributed to the mindset of everybody trying to be little Alan Moores and becoming so insulated and playing to the hardcore audiences, so that you have to either be, you know, a Aspergerian master of the canon and the full history of the comics.
Just read his Swamp Thing stuff, man, and that's
wanted to be little geniuses in their own little spheres.
Well,
all these writers that came up after
Warren Ellis does it,
and they're all fucking pretentious and they're repetitive in their themes.
If we don't have that, dude, look what we have. We have like Mark Waid and stuff like that writing.
Mark Waid does better material than a lot of those guys.
No, dude.
I'm not saying I like everything Mark Waid does. There's a lot of stuff I don't like, but a lot of the comics I've enjoyed the most over the last 20 years have been Waid comics because he just tells good stories, and he tells stories that are accessible to a broader audience. And he doesn't tell a story where, you know, like with fucking Warren Ellis, that everything's going to end up in shit, because Warren Ellis can't write optimistic stories for the most part. If it's anything involving superheroes and you give it to Garth Ennis, he's got to fucking drag them through the gutters.
And the gutters. I find their stories more adult. If I want a Golden Age comic book, I'll never read one because they're fucking boring.
Well,
I don't want the super optimistic
heroes. I think
heroes.
You might enjoy some Golden Age stuff. It's the Silver Age stuff that I think is really boring. Stuff that's very sanitized and very formulaic.
All I know is, dude, is I've tried reading old issue stuff and I just could not get into it. I did not enjoy it. I mean, I love Grant Morrison stuff. Now, granted, they do get weird, but they like pushing the envelope. Mm-hmm. Some of the old stuff I read was just
bizarre. Okay. Yeah.
Not even bizarre.
But that's part of the fun these Freudian clashes. It's like everything is, it's like these guys are unaware of what their stories are telling the person who reads those stories. You, especially as somebody who has a little bit of a psych background, could read those Golden Age books and you'd be like, oh, this guy had mommy issues. Oh, this guy, I think that it's fun because the psychology is so exposed. They can't conceal their predilections. So you see a lot of that weird, trippy, sexually confused, dark, Oedipal, just all kinds of fucked up weird shit goes into those Golden Age stories, and they're a lot of fun. Plus, some of them are just great. Like anything Jack Hole, I love Jack Hole stuff. Like his Plastic Man stories. I used to despise Plastic Man until I actually read the classic stuff, because nobody else comes close to that material. They're just such great, entertaining stories. And they're dark, but they're dark without being bleak. It's like they'll deal with dark themes, but you come out of it feeling good about the story you read.
Is Plastic Man supposed to be that really that powerful?
I
read The Dark Knight Strikes Back, and they were like they were scared shitless of Plastic Man.
I think that Plastic Man is one of the more powerful superheroes in terms of what he could potentially do and what he has demonstrated he is capable of doing. He's a guy who, if he wasn't such an underachiever, he'd be upper level. And when you read the Golden Age stories, he is the hero of his universe. Plastic Man has the misfortune that's befallen a lot of characters. He got bought by DC Comics. And if you're not Superman or Batman at DC Comics, then you don't matter. You're always going to be subordinate to the big guns, and they're always going to tear you down, and they're often not going to understand you. People who've written Plastic Man stories since Jack Hole, or at least since the Quality folded up, it's like they don't even understand who that character is and how to write stories for them. All the stuff, the Jim Carrey stuff that Grant Morrison introduced, and they're still doing that to this day, that's not anything like the Plastic Man stuff from the 40s.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was the straight man in a weird world. So it's him being like a hero, and all this gonzo stuff is happening around him, and he's actually sort of the straight man. So they completely flip it, and so he's just this obnoxious, libidinous dork.
Yeah.
And I can't stand that character.
Well, I just always remember the cartoon that came out in the 80s.
I freaking loathe Plastic Man because of that cartoon. Until I went back and I read, actually what got me is Art Spiegelman, the guy who did Mouse.
Yeah.
He did a book called Jack Cole and Plastic Man, where he basically explained, he did a biography of the creator, and then he gave examples of Plastic Man's stories and talked about the character and what he meant when he came out in the 40s and why this was a great character. And Spiegelman totally sold me on Plastic Man, and went back and I read the Jack Cole stuff, and it's fantastic. It's phenomenal. And nobody can write or draw that character correctly. They're just not capable. They don't have the talent to do what Jack Cole did. So it's like, what's the point? They fail so miserably that I don't care to see Plastic Man in new stories because they're going to screw him up.
Yeah.
And mostly they go back to either the awful cartoon or to what Grant Morrison set up in JLA, where he's basically Jim Carrey as the Mask. I find both those characters just absolutely off-putting. Mm. But I loathe that cartoon.
That's all I remember. Him and Plastic Baby and Penny.
Plaz and Hula Hula and Pretty Penny.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's exactly it. It's like, when we were kids, if you were a superhero fan, you watched everything. You watched the Hanna-Barbera guys, you watched Birdman, you watched the Galaxy Trio, Space Ghost, all that stuff. Anything with superheroes, if you were a superhero fan, you'd watch that. At least if you were me, because I love superheroes. But the one exception was fucking Plastic Man. I'd rather watch the Blue Eagle and Dino-Mutt than fucking Plastic Man. Ugh, hated Plastic Man. But he's great. He's awesome. You just have to read the Jack Cole stuff.
Okay, I was just wondering, because I remember, I was going to ask you that one day, because I just reread the series real quick, because the new Dark Knight Strikes 3 or whatever came out.
Yeah, the Master Race.
Yeah, so I'm just going
to
wait.
But you realize Frank Miller's got virtually nothing to do with that, right?
Really?
Brian Azzarello like wrote it based on like a conversation he had with Frank Miller. And he flashed his name all over it, but it's basically Brian Azzarello. We got way the fuck off topic, though. The Rebirth thing. You've got Green Lantern and you got The Flash, and both... The Flash was doing really well when Geoff Johns wrote him the first time, and he totally sucked for several years after that, where they tried to replace him with Bart Allen, and they tried to have Wally running around with his dumb super kids. It was all Geoff Johns' fault, because he's the one who created those babies in the first place. And so they'd screw up The Flash so badly that Johns had to come in and redo The Flash. And at the time, I know there's a lot of criticism, because the feeling was that not every hero has to have a dark, grim, and gritty origin story. Mm-hmm. The whole thing where Flash's mom is murdered, and his dad goes to prison for the murder, and he becomes a forensic scientist because he's trying to prove his dad was innocent. And that's apparently the basis for the entire Flash TV show.
Yeah.
So people kind of walked back their criticism when they realized, hey, this stuff actually made Barry Allen work as a multimedia figure, and now people love the shit out of Barry Allen. Because, I mean, they were baying for blood when they got rid of Wally West for the longest time there, and now people are like, well, we still like Wally, but we're totally on Barry's side now as well, so nobody wants to get rid of Barry Allen. So what they're going to try to do, again, like Rebirth, they kept Kyle Rayner around, but made sure to raise the prominence of Hal Jordan and fix all the things that was wrong with him, and try to get back to the core concepts of the Green Lantern Corps so that people would enjoy the whole mythos again. And the same thing happens with The Flash, except they go inward instead of outward. They try to figure out why Barry Allen didn't work and to fix the things that didn't work about him and then put him out there as the new Flash, which to my mind, well, Barry Allen has a much stronger story engine than Wally ever did, because Barry's a guy where he's already a police forensic scientist, plus he has super speed powers. So there's a ton of stories that come right out of that, as you know, without even screwing with his origin and bringing his mom into it and all that kind of stuff. But with Wally, all he ever was a superhero.
Yeah.
He was a Teen Titan, and then he grew up and he became the Flash, and he never had anything else. So you basically can only tell superhero super speed stories with Wally. He doesn't have another dimension to him, where Barry's got a lot of stuff going on. You know, Wally didn't even have a secret identity for most of the years that he was the Flash. Everybody knew that Wally West was the Flash, so you can't even play those stories anymore. So I liked what they did with that, and that's what they're apparently going to try to do through DC Universe Rebirth, where Johns has quit Justice League, and all he's going to do is write that book to help get DC on the right course. And the idea is to, instead of trying to make everything extreme 90s style flavor DC, they're going to bring back all the old continuity and try to include the stuff that worked, and kind of basically just, can't we all get along in terms of continuity? Try to bring everything back that works and try to figure out what the core of all the DC characters are and play to that. And by cutting down the line, they can focus on their primary iconic heroes. Your Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. Make sure that you're getting those characters right and moving forward, since they're going to be trying to adapt those characters into movies and stuff. And clearly, when they do adapt them, they tend to go back to the classic incarnations of those characters. They're not jumping onto the 52 bandwagon, because it never seemed like the new 52 figured out what the hell it was supposed to be anyway.
So
it never seemed to have any...
reboot in like 6 months to a year again.
Rebirth
of the Birth or some shit like that.
I think, honestly, this is the last shot they've got, because every time they try to do one of these big universal shakeups at DC, you have a big spike initially, and then it bottoms out. And the New 52 initially was a big success, but within a couple of years, the bloom was off the rose, and now I don't think DC Comics ever had sales as bad as they have now. Literally, books that sell above 10,000 copies, at least no more than 15,000 copies, they'll keep publishing that. You know, 15,000 copies. I think we could probably go down to Kinko's and run a 15,000 copy print run of our own little mini zine or something and outsell DC Comics. And you know, their biggest selling book, I think, was, with the exception of things like Master Race, where they have 15 gajillion covers, I think their biggest selling titles were like, you know, 40 to 60,000 copies. I think Batman was in that realm.
Really?
Yeah, that's how bad it got. And Batman's a relative success.
And that's the only DC book I'm reading right now.
That's the only DC book a lot of people were reading. Yeah. And even that book started to fall off.
Yeah, it Snyder does a good job, but there was...
Did you get tired of the whole amnesiac Bruce Wayne thing?
Yeah, I was kind of tired of the whole the Return of the Joker. That just...
Yeah.
I liked the Court of Owls. I thought that was a cool concept. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was cool.
I
gotta tell you, I didn't read any of that Batman stuff. I don't think I've read cover to cover probably any of the Capullo Snyder run. I just know it through people talking about it on the internet. Yeah. And I'll flip through the occasional issue. But you can tell there's a vitality to that book. It's a good-looking book. I think Capullo draws Gotham City better than virtually anybody else.
He was on his A-game.
All the characters, he was so perfectly suited to that. I remember there's a fellow who writes for some of the websites that I like, and he's got a blog that's called J. Caleb Mazzucato. And I remember when they first were announcing the New 52, he's like, I don't know about this Capullo guy on Batman. I'm like, you're out of your freaking mind. Capullo's going to be awesome. And he was. All those years on Spawn.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You know, and he was great at doing the Batman Rogues. That's a great looking book, and the Court of Owls stuff was very intriguing. Even even when they brought back that dumb Bob Haney idea of Bruce Wayne having an older brother that was messed up that his parents hid from him and stuff, yeah. He even made that stuff work.
So yeah, no, you're right. That was a good run, but once they started Zero and all that,
didn't like Year Zero.
I just lost interest.
What about stuff? So the way they characterized Riddler, that didn't do anything for you?
No.
Okay.
Well, whole town was like Gotham. That was the weird thing. Was like Gotham was trapped in a bubble where Riddler was running the town and killing people. He was doing these quizzes a day and killing people. And I'm thinking, like, at no point did any heroes outside of Gotham come and try to rescue. I'm assuming Gotham is the size of New York, so it's maybe the largest city in the DC universe, second only to maybe Metropolis.
I think that most people think of Gotham being in Jersey. So whatever the biggest metropolis is in Jersey, it would probably be about equal to Gotham.
I always figured Metropolis was like LA, Gotham was New York. So your second largest city in the country is literally cut off from the world, and no heroes are. Let me go do something about it. I get they try to explain that all the heroes are busy, or I don't know. It just seemed really odd.
Yeah, that's one of those areas where DC just doesn't work as a shared universe, because they always try to do that. It's like during No Man's Land, where you had the big cataclysm and a plague, and so they just decided that Gotham wouldn't be even part of the United States anymore, and none of the superheroes could apparently go into Gotham and fix all the problems, and you're like, seriously, they're just gonna leave this town looking like this forever? Yeah. Now if it were in New Orleans, then it might make a difference, but generally speaking, a major metropolis, everybody's gonna want to rush in and fix it and try to help.
Okay
so anyway, so the idea is to deboot the DC universe and allow as much of the old continuity to come into play as functions, as works, and just let everybody tell stories about the characters as they're recognized as being. So hopefully it works out for them. The problem that I have is the same problem I had with the New 52. Unless they've got actual new creators who can bring fresh voices to the mix, it's just the same old guys. And I also, just operationally speaking, you got a company with all the guys that ran Marvel into the ground in the 90s, you know, all those editors and all those creators, and administratively, you know, DC has been on a pretty, with the exception of the spike of the New 52, DC's been steadily going down for 15 years now. So at what point do you look at Dan Didio and Jim Lee and Jeff Johns, and since she's been around for a while now, Diane Nelson, and go, okay, when's the return of our investment? When are these comic books going to justify their existences?
Wow. Well, I think Jeff Johns proves himself. He's kind of their poster boy right now.
Well, he's their chief creative officer, and I think that he would potentially... I don't know, though, because the thing is, that means that he should be having input into the choices that are made as far as developing the line and what directions to take these characters in. And so far, that hasn't happened. Now, I do think, though, that this is Geoff Johns' turn out to bat. I really feel like the New 52 was more Jim Lee and Dan Didio. Because, I mean, clearly the stylistic tendencies of Jim Lee was all of the New 52. And you know that he redesigned a lot of those characters or had a hand in those redesigns. So you felt the mark of Jim Lee. Where with this, Geoff Johns is the guy who's out in front of this. He's the guy who's doing most of the talk about Rebirth. He's going to write the story that sets off this universe again. But he's the guy who set off the New 52 through Flashpoint as well. He wrote one of the main titles, Justice League. He's been involved in a lot of not so great crossovers like Trinity War and Forever Evil, which Forever Evil I think was extremely damaging because they sabotaged a major launch of a Justice League spinoff book where they gone to the trouble of putting out 52 different covers for Justice League of America number one, one for every flag in the United States, plus Puerto Rico, plus I think they had another one or two besides. So he put out 50 some odd variant covers for this comic, and the creative team that's launching the book leave it 3 issues in to go do Forever Evil, and by the fifth or sixth issue they already had a different writer, different artist. Oh, and because of Forever Evil, suddenly the book is about Martian Manhunter and Star Spangled Kid inside the mind of Firestorm having adventures that are completely not real, and they're just inside some dude's mind the whole time for like 6 months, 8 months of this shit.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that Forever Evil was hugely damaging.
Well, and I've read DC Comics. I read the trade on that. It was not very good.
I didn't even give it a shot.
It was so bad I can't even recall. I just remember reading it just to read it because I just wanted to see what the big deal was because I kept hearing about it. When I found the trade, I read it and just underwhelmed.
Yeah. Well, one of the things they did within a couple of years of the New 52 starting is Diane Nelson made it to where Geoff Johns could only write like one ongoing title and then like one special at any given time. So he could only contribute at most 2 books a month to DC's main line. But he's supposed to be involved with all the adaptations, and he is. My understanding is he's very involved with that. But because he's involved with that, the comics suffer.
Yeah.
So, but I think that Rebirth is his initiative, but if this shit doesn't work out, then I think they're all potentially on the chopping block.
Because right now I can't think of any writers at DC besides Geoff Johns and Snyder that I was enjoying reading.
I've heard some guys here and there. Like I think the one of the fellows, I think his name was Tom King. He'd been writing Omega Men, which sold nothing. It was selling like 9,000 copies or something, maybe even less than that. But it had buzz, and they forced the fans kind of forced DC to continue those series to issue 12 so we could finish the story. But he's been working over at Marvel in books like The Vision that's gotten people's attention. I think he's co-writing Grayson, which is one of the few decently successful books DC's putting out right now. And so they signed him and a couple of artists to exclusive contracts. And so I guess they're trying to find some new talent. They got Sam Humphries, which was a big deal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's exclusive to DC now.
Ah, he left Marvel?
He's going to do, I think, he's going to wrap up Star-Lord and whatever else he was working on, and then he's going to work over at DC. Yeah. So that hopefully they can get a few new creative people, but that was the big problem with the New 52. It was all the same guys who were writing crappy stories for DC before the relaunch. They just switched titles.
Yeah.
So you're not going to get any freshness out of that. You know, I mean, the thing that made DC work so great after the crisis in large part was that all of a sudden you had John Byrne and you had Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli and George Perez, all these guys working on the mainstream characters, Giffen and DeMatteis and McGuire on Justice League. You had really fresh takes on those characters, and you can't get fresh takes by the same people that have been working for you for years.
True.
Anyway.
True. So what was the point?
Oh, okay. Well, we got off track.
Again.
We were talking about Green Arrow and how, like, I've tried to watch a few episodes of Green Arrow. I can't get into it at all. But the thing with Green Arrow is that he's Batman. He was created to basically be Batman, but instead of having Bat everything, he has Arrow everything. So an Arrow car, Arrow plane, his sidekick instead of being Robin is Speedy, but they're basically functionally the same. And the main difference, though, is his origin was he was a rich playboy who, instead of seeing a bat, fell off a boat. And he washed up on this island, and he's stuck on this island, and he has to survive through his wits. And the main thing that keeps him alive was he develops his archery so he's able to hunt and get food while he's stuck on this island for X amount of time. I don't remember. I think it's like a year in the comics. For years, they tried to get a Batman TV show on the air. And for years, they tried to make Green Arrow a character that was not just Batman in green. And somebody finally figured out on Smallville, and then they spun it off from there. We could just have Green Arrow be Batman on TV and, you know, just pretend he's Batman and he doesn't have the cape and cowl, but otherwise he functions the same as Batman. And that's basically what he does. It's Arrow show. he's a rich industrialist. He has his secret lair, you know, if not under the mansion, then somewhere in the general vicinity. He's got his support staff. You've got the girl who basically functions the same as Oracle. You've got his sidekicks. He had his own sort of Commissioner Gordon for a while there. And the main difference is that on this island, a lot of people that became powerful individuals all ended up on this island. And I think the theory is that the island itself is evil and draws people to it and messes with them. But the island helped to create Slade Wilson, turn him into Deathstroke. And apparently John Constantine was on that island at some point, because that's how they got the crossover with his TV series from NBC once that got canceled. The way that Constantine and Oliver Queen knew each other was through, they were both on the island at some point. And so all the show does is constantly flashing back to what happened on the island, which then informs stuff that's happening in the present.
Okay.
So yeah. So The Flash spun out of that, and you do watch The Flash.
Yeah.
Okay. How do you feel about that show? Have you watched the whole series at this point?
Yeah. Season 1 and 2.
What is it about, basically, overall?
If you've read the books, it's very close to what the book stories are, you know.
The Geoff Johns stuff or something else?
Okay. Yeah. Well, dude, when you were just talking about Barry, the whole Barry Allen stuff, you literally just talked about the show. Okay. They follow that.
Because that was mostly the first season was him trying to get his father freed.
And then, of course, you have he fought the Reverse Flash in that one, in season 1. And now they're actually doing the 52. They actually went to Earth 2, and the big villain is Zoom. They're smart where they're staying with the canon of the books. So it's if you read the books, you'll enjoy it. If you've never read the books, you'll enjoy it either way. It's a solid, good show. I tried to watch season 1, never got hooked into it. The funny thing with The Flash was I thought it was going to be dumb, because I remember the old Flash series from 96?
No, earlier than that.
Was it earlier than that?
Because that came out, I think it was like 90-91.
Okay. I remember that Flash where he was like, you know, he would speed around and he had to eat immediately because he was so burnt out. And I remember the suit looking really clunky.
Old suit looked great.
Clunky. I always felt it looked clunky, almost too solid. He looked more like a bodybuilder, where at least Barry is very thin, so he looks like a track runner. So that whole speed concept worked for him. Because if you look at Zoom is kind of big and intimidating. He looks too big to be a speedster, but you know, he's kind of this cool, you know, once you start realizing he's stealing other speedster's speed, it's like, okay, I get it now. That's kind of where he gets his power. But that's the big buildup for season 2. I remember I had no desire to watch it, and then it popped up on Netflix. I'm like, I'll watch an episode, and then I end up binge watching the whole thing because it was so good. I remember texting y'all that one day, and like, Gorilla City, they did Gorilla City. And of course, Mac was like, what the fuck is that? But I'm not a huge DC guy, but I know enough of the Flash canon where I was like, okay, I know what this is, I know what that is. They're always putting Easter eggs in it, which is always fun for me to try to catch. It's just a good show. That's where I'm really shocked that DC or Warner Brothers, I think, dropped the ball, where they're like, well, let's do the movies, let's create a whole new Flash. And I'm like, dude, you have this great Flash already on TV with a built-in audience. I would have enjoyed watching him on the big screen, because he's actually a pretty good actor. Like, he really pulls off. Right now they're doing the whole 52, so there's two different Barrys, one with the power, one without the power, and one's like super nerdy. And he played him very well. I enjoyed him. I mean they were very distinctly different. So I'm really disappointed at that so far. But as far as the Flash,
you're disappointed,
great show.
What?
That they're going with creating a whole new Flash.
Oh, for the movies.
Yeah, for the movies. Because like I said, I think we've talked about this before. I think that's their biggest mistake, is they're just just churning out characters, and there's no real connection or continuity between them. It's just like a different Flash. It's going to be a different Batman. It's going to be a different this, a different
that. You're saying that they're churning out too many characters whole cloth to the movies
and
instead of allowing,
you're going to have different Flashes. If they ever, I would be shocked if they ever used the Green Arrow for anything. You already have this
in the movies?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like if he made an appearance. I think Marvel did it right, where every character comes out, they have their own movie, they have their own story. You can hear about them in the TV shows, you know, Agent Carter or S.H.I.E.L.D. You'll hear, you know, they'll drop
or in the Netflix stuff.
Yeah, but it's the Daredevil stuff, but it's never like, oh, wait, there's two different Flashes, or there's two different agent
Carter, or just two. I don't know.
You don't have a Captain America for TV and a Captain America for movies.
Well, it's more.
You're separate. You've got these preferences. Like, well, I like the TV Cap. Well, I like the movie Cap.
Yeah. Well, it seems more in line with a straight story.
I've defended that previously because it kind of fits where DC's more about having the iconic characters and having different universes, different takes on those characters, without any one necessarily being the definite. Where Marvel's all about continuity, so everything has to connect.
Yeah, well, because I think
in that sense they do reflect their universes by through their media campaigns.
I was thinking about the other day when I was talking to Fryho, and Marvel almost feels like you're reading like the Fall of the Mutants, and the TV shows are those offshot books, you know, like Power Pack, or this one little series off to the side that you can watch it and it plays into the universe, or you could ignore it totally and it doesn't affect you.
The casket of Eternal Winter or whatever it is, it gets opened in Thor. So all the Marvel comic books, it's summertime and they've got snow because that happened in that one book, but you do need to read those other books to understand what's happening in Thor and vice versa. But it all ends up being connected.
Wow, you went different one with that. I was going Follow the Mutants or Inferno, things I can remember where there was like 40 different books attached to this one series.
It's a major point in the Daredevil series that people are reacting to stuff that happened in the Avengers movie. But it's not direct. It's like this: what it did for the property values having a big battle with aliens
and so
in New
I think
York.
That to me right there is where Marvel got it right, where DC, we talked about this earlier. I'm worried about the movies, dude. Like I went and saw Deadpool again, and damn, that's a game changer, dude. The next movie, I need to see a damn good movie like that again.
Yeah, I like, because that's one thing I was thinking about too, is even before y'all mentioned the helicarrier being snuck into Deadpool, which has been confirmed.
It was
a helicarrier, but they can't say it was a helicarrier. Just like I didn't catch it because I'm not enough of a Deadpool fan, but that guy he runs into during the final fight, Bob, the Hydra agent, but he can't be a Hydra agent in the movie. But it's not hard to fill in the details where, well, Bob used to be a Hydra agent, or he's going to become a Hydra agent, so it's still connected. So what I kind of like is that the mutants were always, to my mind, but when Marvel was good, the mutants were isolated. You know, I liked, when I was an X-Men fan, I liked that I didn't have to read a bunch of other Marvel titles. I just read the X books. That's what I was cared about. Those all interconnected with one another.
Yeah.
But I didn't have to worry about Cap and Thor and all those other guys because they didn't really have a lot to do because the mutants were dealing with mutant problems in their own little universe, you know? Oh. It wasn't always, it's like the whole Beyonce formation thing. The mutants weren't about you. The mutants were about the mutants. It's mutants dealing with mutants and talking to mutants, and it doesn't have to do anything to do with the Avengers. You don't have to worry about this Avengers. We're going to handle our business over here on our own. So I kind of like that functionally, that's the way movies work, is since Marvel doesn't have oversight over the X movies, and because Marvel has starved their revenue stream, so they're not getting any money off of toys and a lot of other ancillary merchandise, they're free. One of the reasons why you get an R-rated Deadpool movie is because they don't have to worry about selling Deadpool toys to children, because they're only selling movies to people. And if they're only selling movies to people, they have a lot more freedom of what they can do with those movies. So I like that there's this island within the Fox universe where they can go drop F-bombs and get really extremely violent. But the X-Men, the core X-Men, don't have to be R-rated. They can still have their typical adventures, and you can still have crossover between the Deadpool universe and the X-Men universe. But Deadpool can go off and do his own thing and not worry about what's going on with the X-movies and not worry about tainting from one to the other. It's what I wanted to see happen with Fantastic Four if that movie had been good.
Well, I think Wolverine, they're definitely going to go R next time, and it's be primarily violent.
Yeah, but I don't think everything has to be R-rated. I do think that...
Wolverine does.
I think that when you're down to the third Wolverine movie, and you know it's the last one Hugh Jackman's going to do, and you know that you're going to probably have to recast that character if you're going to continue to use them after that, if you want to go ahead and try to do an R-rated one and try to fulfill the desires of a lot of people for Wolverine instead of... Because I actually think that Marvel's pull hurts Wolverine in the movies, because Marvel wants to sell their toys. They want to sell their family-friendly stuff. They're Disney now. So they don't want Wolverine running around and chopping people up with his foot-long claws. But Fox has no reason not to let Wolverine do that if it's going to make them more money.
Yeah.
And they've had so much complaints about how they handle the X-Men properties in those movies anyway. They're just saying, okay, go ahead and just do the Wolverine movie you guys want to make.
I keep hearing Old Man Logan.
We tried it a couple of times. It hadn't really worked out that great for us. You go and just do whatever you want to do with Wolverine for this last movie. movie because we're focusing on the new team that's going to come out of Apocalypse, for instance. They've got all those new X-Men that they've cast. They've recast Jean and Scott and all
those
people.
You really think
they're
going to go fourth?
Absolutely. I think there's no reason not to continue going forward.
But what story arc's next? Inferno?
Well, that's kind of what's interesting is because of all the time travel stuff, Deadpool is the only story that's happening in the present now. Like the stuff with Deadpool.
Yeah.
Because all the stuff in the X-Men movies have been taking place in the past for the last several years. Days of Future Past, you could argue, takes place in the far future and in the past. Mm-hmm. But the majority of the movie takes place in the 70s. First Class took place in the 60s. Apocalypse is going to take place in the 80s. So Deadpool's the only movie series that's out now. That's contemporary. And I guess Wolverine will be too. So you've got X-Men spread out all over across these different decades. So you've got a lot of leeway on what you want to bring into what section of the universe and when. So I think that's kind of cool. I think it's liberating that they're able to just spread them out and do what they want to do. Because it doesn't invalidate Famke Janssen and James Marsden and all those guys in the X movies. We're seeing them when they were kids, and we're seeing the adventures they had when they were first starting the X-Men.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're going to have to recast a bunch of them anyway, because this one's the last one where they've got the people from First Class. After this, they lose Jennifer Lawrence, James Marsden, McAvoy, all those guys are all, their contracts are all up now. Not for X-Men. Honestly, Jennifer Lawrence is just too big to be in X-Men movies now. She's one of the biggest stars in Hollywood. There's no reason for her to have to do X-Men movies. She should be making her coin. Fassbender, I really don't know if I don't see him as enough of a draw yet. I think that you can see Fassbender re-upping on a contract. You can see McAvoy re-upping because they're names, but they don't really put asses in seats. So I think they could probably get those guys back. But Jennifer Lawrence's mystique, that's never going to happen again.
Dude, what else has Jennifer Lawrence done, dude?
Except she does tons of stuff.
The Mockingbird books, whatever.
Those did tons of freaking money, too. And she does all these dramas and stuff that make money. She does the Russell, what's his face? The guy who did Silver Linings Playbook and David O. Russell. She's like in all of his movies now. Every time he makes a new movie, she's the star of it for the most part, or one of the major stars in it, you know?
Yeah.
They've done American Hustle together. They did Silver Linings Playbook. They did Joy. So.
You seem like a fan. You would know this. I don't.
Yeah, no. I don't have to be a fan, dude. Jennifer Lawrence is one of the biggest stars in freaking Hollywood, man. She's on the covers of the magazines all the stinking time. She's in all these big franchises. She's in dramas. She's already won an Academy Award. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, who's this Jennifer Lawrence chick? It's like, are you out of your mind?
I don't. That's it. I haven't really seen any of her other stuff.
Oh, no. That's already two big franchises, though. You realize she's the star or one of the major stars of both those franchises, though.
Yeah, but the Mockingbirds, those are done.
They're not doing anything else with that from what I understand. It's Mockingjay, by the way.
Mockingjay, Mockingbird.
Three completely different franchises. And nobody liked the sequel to that Mockingbird one, by the way. Everybody was kind of pissed off about To Kill a Mockingbird sequel they did.
Well, actually, the writer just passed away, so that's why I threw it in there.
Yeah. Well, you know what they did, right?
Yeah.
It's really scummy. What happened is Harper Lee had written, that was actually an earlier draft of To Kill a Mockingbird. Like, she wrote the book, and it was very rough, and it was the only time she'd ever written a book. So her and her editors and other people, I think Truman Capote had a hand in it, they all kind of worked together to take this earlier draft and turn it into one of the classics of modern literature, To Kill a Mockingbird. But this earlier draft was never supposed to come out. But what had happened is I think that her sister, who had kind of watched over her whole life, died. And so these people who became the executors of the estate, they came in and they take this little old lady that was in a nursing home that I think was probably seen out or something by that point. And they basically, they silenced her. Nobody heard from her in the public. And they started telling you what her wishes were. And it just so happened her wishes were suddenly this thing that she refused to do for 50, 60 years. Well, now she's going to release this follow-up book. And it's really just an old draft that was never intended to be published, so they can make that money off of her right at the end of her life. So really scummy.
That's sad.
Yeah,
but my point was that you could do a small franchise with X-Men. I mean,
you could do a whole bunch of franchises. I think that's part of the plan, is they're going to go ahead and get Cable into the next Deadpool movie, and then ideally they'll spin Cable off into an X-Force franchise. You've got a Deadpool franchise. You maybe have a Wolverine franchise if they recast that character, and then you've got the X-Men as well. So they want to take the mutants and do the same thing that Marvel's already done with their entire universe of characters and just do it with the mutants. And because the mutants were always isolated anyway, and because they've got a pretty well-formed universe of characters, you can really realistically do that. Because you got Gambit still coming out, too, if you recall correctly.
That's true.
So they can film a whole universe just out of Cable, Gambit, Deadpool, X-Force, and not even mess with the X-Men.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It seems too much like they're stretching it too thin.
Like, honestly,
but X-Men, but X-Men's such a huge franchise anyway. I don't see where it's not like you've got, like, you're going deep on the bench on the Justice League, and all of a sudden you've got Fire and Ice and Norton. You know,
let me ask you, how excited are you for a sequel to Deadpool?
I'm not. I like the movie.
It's a good movie.
I like the movie fine. It's cute. It's going to depend on what they do with Cable. Honestly, right. I think it could be a lot of fun. I think that at this point, I want to see Deadpool bouncing off of a straight man. And it's going to depend on how he relates to Cable and what they do. But I the movie was so much more conventional than I thought it was going to be. I really thought it was going to be a little crazier, and the Deadpool would be a more dark and ambivalent character in terms of how the audience would have to approach a guy like that. But he's basically an action lead in a romantic action comedy. So, I mean, he's really conventional. He's ugly. He's goofy. He makes a lot more jokes than per minute than other action comedy stars, but he's not that far off the beaten path. So I think it works the first time. I'm not sure how well it works the second time. And again, I thought the movie was amusing, but it wasn't like, I'm not one of these guys who's like, oh my God, I gotta go read some more Deadpool stuff. Honestly, I've still got Deadpool stuff in my read offline section of my Marvel Unlimited app, and I'm just looking forward to deleting that because I don't want to read any more Deadpool stories. I'm already, as far as the comic book character, now that we've done the podcast episode, and I was already bored during the podcast, why I stuffed that podcast full of audio clips just to kind of keep my interest up, and everybody hated that. It's like, well, okay, we just won't talk about Deadpool at all ever again until the sequel comes out. I couldn't hold interest enough in that character to even edit the podcast about the movie, so that won't help too. And I forgot to mention too, Paquita wanted me to mention that she was having trouble staying awake during Deadpool. She thought it was nice and all, but she didn't find it interesting enough to where it was keeping her awake. It's not like she was sleep deprived. She just kind of started to nod off. It was cute. It was cute. I didn't find it as funny as you guys did, but it was cute. Yeah, we can get back to like on the Flash too. Do you have a preference of season? Did you like two. One better than two? You like two better?
I'm digging two most right now.
Why is that?
I like that they've gone to Earth 2 right now and they're doing the 52, which was kind of cool.
Yeah. So they're going to, I know they're going to Earth 2.
Zoom is such an awesome villain too.
Yeah. I know they're going to Earth 2, but are they going to other Earths besides Earth 2?
No, they've just gone to Earth 2 right now.
They're doing the 52.
Well, they did this thing where there's like 52 portals from Earth 1 to Earth 2.
You saw that cameo by Supergirl in that one shot.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Ugh. I know. Frank's agenda. Yes, I know.
Well, you haven't watched the show yet.
I saw an episode, dude. It was rough.
Which episode did you watch?
The first one? Yeah.
So tell me your opinions on the first episode of Supergirl. I'm curious.
Like on what?
Did you watch the entire episode?
Yeah.
Okay. What did you think of the first episode of Supergirl?
I couldn't get into it. I was checking out so often. I will usually look at my phone, as you've known. I spent more time looking at my phone than actually watching the episode. It was just, like I said, it was made for 15-year-old girls who just discovered their bodies. That's who that show was made for.
So, because
I could not get into it.
I've never seen an episode of The Flash. I tried watching the Arrow show, and I didn't like the performances. I guess were okay, but it was kind of cheesy looking. I didn't like how they handled the action. I thought it was a dumb looking show. I've never tried Flash at all. I've never even remotely tried that. That one looks like it's a pretty entertaining show, though. What stylistically are the differences between a given episode of Flash versus what you saw in Supergirl?
Supergirl felt like it had an agenda, like empower women and girls, and you can do this, and oh, she's all kind of cutesy about a guy she likes. It was very bubblegum.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like whenever you see the comic books come out and you see the kiddie books and you know it's a kiddie book, like it doesn't feel like it's gonna get dark. She's not gonna go through any trials or tribulations. It's gonna be like, oh gee, he doesn't like me, he likes me, he doesn't like. I mean, I'm reading a lot into a first episode, but I just couldn't get past that episode.
Mm-hmm.
Where The Flash, it gets dark, and the other characters have, like, you know they introduced what's his name? I'm drawing a blank right now.
Talking about
Cisco. He played Cisco on Law and Order.
The father of the West.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Iris West.
Iris
cop
West.
Dad. Yeah. Okay.
So I don't know. It's just.
So when you say Cisco, I'm thinking you're talking about Vibe.
Oh yeah, Vibe is fantastic, dude. I actually in season one I thought he was a little annoying. It was season two he's actually kind of fun because he's the one that's always trying to come up with names for the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Now the show is by far not the greatest show on TV.
movie, but it's fun. I can actually watch an episode most times and enjoy it. There's a couple episodes where it's a little long or the villains don't make sense. Like, they had this earthquake dude come out and, I mean, he got beaten like relatively pretty fast time. I mean, it just, sometimes it don't, the characters they have pop up don't make sense to me why they're there. Killer Frost was cool.
They had a lot of Firestorm villains on that show in the first season, like Multiplex, and I know recently they had Killer Frost like on the show.
Tar Pit was kind of cool. That was kind of a cool concept.
Well, Tar Pit's a Flash villain. Flash villain,
yeah, but it was
I was talking about like they did a lot of Firestorm villains, though.
The Turtle's actually cool.
But all you're doing is bringing up, so you didn't like any of the Flash villains they had then? I mean, sorry, the Firestorm villains they had then?
I didn't know those were Firestorm villains.
Like Multiplex and the Sand Demon, and who else did they have? They had a bunch of Firestorm villains in the first season. Well, what did you think about the Firestorm stuff, though? Because that was mostly on The Flash, right? Where they showed...
Yeah, well, he was there.
Mm-hmm. Barry.
Caitlin Snow.
To be Killer Frost.
Well, on Earth 2, though.
Earth 2, yeah.
Which is, you know, Deathstorm's the one from Blackest Night, right?
So yeah. He's sure of a skeleton, right?
Well, I mean, if they were going to be 100% true to him, yeah.
That's what I was expecting. I mean, the first season, I remember watching it. You got to remember, I binge-watched it in, like, fucking one night.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it. I liked the Grodd episodes. Like, it was a nice, nice little twist.
My point, though, is because there's a lot of Firestorm stuff in The Flash, but you seem to really gloss over that, so you're into the Flash stuff. Yeah, no, you're not really into any of the Firestorm stuff, though.
I don't really know. Firestorm, dude. I told you, what's his name came one time and he's like, fire, and it shoots plasma, I think, or some kind of energy beams.
Yeah.
And it's an old man, and like two dudes have to touch each other in a special way to create him. And so it's kind of weird. I mean,
yeah.
I remember him from the cartoons, and just he had that work. Mm-hmm. That was about it. The show, I mean, they kind of did that cool, like, Viper, Flash, Green Arrow, they were all. I just never realized all that.
Mm-hmm.
Powerful hero, right?
Yeah, on the show he's supposed to just have the fire powers, it seems like, right? He just shoots the fire blasts and stuff. In the comics, he transmutes matter.
That's what I thought.
So that's pretty freaking powerful.
Yeah, because
the doctor would tell about the structures or some shit.
Right.
Yeah, that's what.
So by rights, he should be extraordinarily powerful, but they always had him fight like really weak villains, guys who like Slipknot, who's going to be in Suicide Squad, where he's a master of hemp rope, or all these like werewolf characters. Like, well, werewolves are cool, but Green Arrow should fight the werewolf guys, not the guy who could turn matter, transmute matter. Well, couldn't Firestorm just like turn a tree into silver and then beat the werewolves up with the silver tree, you know, something like that? But yeah, cosmic stuff he could probably do more of. Yeah, they do,
but not at the level of like Marvel or what.
I don't think that their cosmology is as well defined as Marvel, because not only did you have Jim Starlin work, you know, most of his best material out at Marvel, but then you had guys like Mark Gruenwald who helped fill in a lot of the gaps that were left over from that. And Marvel, you know, Fantastic Four spent 100 issues exploring the Marvel Universe, going to other dimensions and other planets. So there was a real strong devotion to showing lots of new stuff in outer space during Marvel in its prime years. Where DC, one of the main guys who wrote a lot of sci-fi for DC back in the 60s was Gardner Fox. And he had a tendency to revisit kind of cheeseball concepts. And it was mostly like aliens with like limited appeal. Guys like Kanjar Rogue keep popping up a bunch, and you know, Hawkman's villains, and it's just not at the same level of grandeur, and you don't have as broad of a scope as you have with Marvel, and it just isn't like well defined.
Well, I mean, I know they had like Darkseid, which is like
they're
baddie in space,
but see, that's part of the problem with Darkseid, though, is he was not created to be part of the DC universe.
All
the fourth world stuff was Jack kind of going off and doing his own thing, and then they try to integrate Darkseid more into the DC universe in the 80s, but Darkseid just doesn't have its potency anymore because he's fought too many people too many times. You only get beaten by Superman so many times before people are like, well, you're not really that powerful then.
Yeah.
Where Galactus, every time Galactus shows up, it's kind of a big deal because they always have to beat him through some sort of a cheat to get rid of this guy. They don't actually beat Galactus. He's not on the ground going, ooh, with flowers and like stars and pretty birds floating around his head. It's like they managed to get him to go away and don't kill us. So that's not the same thing as Darkseid getting stabbed in one eye by Aquaman's trident and stabbed to the other by Wonder Woman's sword. It's like if you could try to do that with a Galactus, and he's just gonna shrug it off.
You're right, because I remember like a lot of the stories, like you had to have the nullifier.
Yeah, I mean the classic story is that Reed managed to get an ultimate nullifier, and basically he was going to undo Galactus himself. himself, the universe, a good chunk of the universe with this device, and Galactus is like, well, this planet isn't worth myself dying and a whole bunch of other people dying, so I'm just going to go ahead and leave. So it basically it was Reed bluffing his way into, yeah.
Well, you know, I remember reading that, and I just remember thinking that was kind of a cool concept.
Yeah.
So, but back to what you're saying. So Firestorm's villains did not know that that was part of...
Yeah, most of the villains that Flash fought in the first season were Firestorm villains, yeah.
Well, like I said, second season, I've actually, because...
So all the planet-hopping stuff, you're getting off on that. You're getting off on them going to all these different new places.
Well, I think also what's helping me is every episode is coming on Hulu, so I can't watch it like back-to-back-to-back-to-back. So I tend to watch some episodes twice now.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I'm on episode 5, I might go back and re-watch episode 1 and 2 again just to kind of refresh my mind. So I'm actually revisiting the stories a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm at lunch at work. I don't have, you know, I got an hour to kill. I'm eating my my hamburger, my sandwich. I'll sit there and I'll watch an episode of Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've caught myself watching season 2 multiple times already.
Uh-huh.
Just because I'll be like, maybe I'll read something and they'll be like, oh, did you catch this Easter egg in episode 3? So I'm like, well, I'm going to have to watch fucking episode 3 and see if I can find it. And so I'll sit there and I'll end up watching the whole fucking episode. Now, again, some of them episodes are a little slow. They're not all fantastic, but for the most part, I'm actually, out of DC stuff, I'm enjoying that. Now, I have to go back. I do enjoy Gotham. I thought Gotham is different.
Well, I don't want to get into Gotham.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to stick with the Greg Berlanti, Andrew Kreisberg shows.
So is that also Marvel Legends? I mean, Marvel Legends.
We'll get to that one too in a minute. Okay. So with Supergirl. Now, they have the soap opera type stuff in Flash too, though, don't they? So will they? Will
a little
they...
bit, but it's more drama. Where, okay. Like I said,
with Supergirl, it was just too girly.
I promise you, I would watch more than one episode. It just felt really. It was Frank's agenda. It was very geared toward girls, women power. Like, I sat there and I'm like, there's nothing here to hook me.
So not a single one of the characters did anything for you?
No.
What did you think of the actors?
It was like 901, you know, or like, was it a Veronica Mars, but with powers type. Yeah. But even that was better than this show. I couldn't. There was like most shows like that that I've watched in the past that were geared toward women. There was something there that I would still watch and I'd be like, oh, that's good. Like Buffy. There's something good there to watch. Veronica Mars, there's something good to watch. Yeah, there was always something there or a character that was interesting or an interaction that was interesting that kept me intrigued enough to follow the next episode. This one, I sat through it and honestly, dude, I blanked out so many times because it didn't feel like, hey guys, look, it's Supergirl. It's more like, hey girls, look, we know you only have Wonder Woman. Let's give you Supergirl now.
Mm-hmm.
But she's going to be kind of girly. And the mistake too was, so when I saw that one episode, then I think we watched Alias.
This was the pilot, right?
Yeah. I watched that and maybe 2 weeks later we started watching Alias at your
house.
You
mean Jessica Jones?
I keep calling it Alias. Yeah, Jessica Jones. And I was just like, holy shit. And I lost interest. I ended up watching Jessica Jones instead. Mm-hmm. Just because it's too much work to go and look for them. I mean, if they release Supergirl, I'll watch a few episodes
on Hulu.
That's not even on Hulu.
Yeah, I don't know if that's one of the ones that's covered by Hulu. So
no, I don't believe it's not. But I was watching it online.
Okay. And also, what did you think of the lead actress, Melissa Benoist?
That's just cute. I mean,
the performance didn't do much for you.
I feel weird because you're asking me to judge a show that's how many episodes in.
Yeah. Oh, it's 12 or 13, I think now.
And I've only seen one, and I hate trying to prejudge a show because maybe it got better. I don't know. I just know.
Hey, I didn't go back and watch Arrow. I just made a point of saying I watched clips online. No, I tried to watch an episode.
From jump, I just was not hooked. There was nothing there to say, hey, keep up with this and it's going to get better. It just seemed like, a show from the 90s, like that superhero TV shows from the 90s where everything seemed formulated. It didn't pop to me or, like I said, speak to me. Now, of course, Flash, it's not fair because that's already one of my favorite characters of Reed, or at least Geoff Johns run. It was an enjoyable read, or even Grant Morrison's run with Millar. It was enjoyable stuff to read. So I've kind of invested a little bit of time in Flash, so it didn't bother me to sit through the series. Now I know. Well, that's all I got for that.
Okay. Also, you have watched some of the clips with Martian Manhunter online, though, right?
I've seen pictures where he's flying next to her.
Yeah, you haven't watched any of the audio video though.
Mm-mm.
You didn't watch the video of his reveal or his fight with you gotta check some of that out. The way they've rendered Martian Manhunter on the show, he looks really freaking cool.
Does he still faint when they show him a match?
Not so far.
Okay, I'm just wondering, like, is she gonna light a match and he's gonna be like dropping it?
Did you watch Smallville?
Huh?
Did you watch Smallville?
I tried to and y'all kept making fun of it so much that I had no desire. I always remember
I walked into your shop and y'all were talking about it, and you were bashing on the fact that he was hung on a cross with the Superman symbol on his chest, ridden in. And somebody, I can't remember, when the shop was like, was that blood or did someone draw on him? Because he technically shouldn't bleed because his skin is impervious. And it was kind of like, well, who beat him? The only episode I've ever watched of Smallville, the only episode was when Christopher Reeves came out.
Mm.
And that was just because it was Christopher Reeves. And I'm like, well, I got to see him. He hasn't been on TV forever. And, you know, he's in his wheelchair. And that was that one cool episode where they translate the language on the ship. And it turns out that they sent him here because they knew he would be stronger than anyone else. And he could rule over the world. And they had this very, what was it? I want to say like a villain. Wait, didn't they do a Martian Manhunter popped up in there too, didn't he?
Yeah.
But he wasn't he going to kill Superman, or he was judging him?
No, he was helping him. Superman had unintentionally let loose a bunch of Phantom Zone criminals. And so John Jones was running around helping him to contain that threat.
So then was it the comic book story where they had hinted that Martian Manhunter was watching over him as a child?
Oh, that was from the John Ostrander series from the late 90s.
Yeah.
Where he's the black farmhand. I think his name was like John Johnson or something, or James Johnson. And basically he's like around for some of the early years of Clark's life to make sure that he's not going to have to take this kid out before he becomes Superman.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I figured it would be the kind of thing you'd like. I didn't particularly care for it, but I thought you might. And the fact that you're bringing it up 20 years later tells me I was right.
I'm just imagining Marshall.
Been like,
well, I always picture, what you call it? I picture the Alan Moore script Twilight, the proposal that floated around for years, where one of the things he does is he snaps Billy Batson's neck when he's in his child form. And so I tend to picture him doing the same thing to Clark Kent if it came to that. Well, they thought that it was a midget, but it turned out Billy Batson was frozen as a child forever once he became Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
But he still aged mentally, so he had adult needs. And so he goes and visits the prostitute to take care of those needs. And one of the prostitutes turns out to be Marshman under disguise and breaks his neck.
Ah, and yet you bash on Alan Moore. The man is a god, walks in among us.
I would have, Twilight, if it had been produced, would have been a pretty interesting comic book. But stuff like that's the reason why DC didn't make it in the first place. Although I think maybe it was actually that Alan Moore took it back after he got ticked at them because they screwed him out of ever having the rights to Watchmen back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he thought that they were going to be creator-owned characters and that the rights would revert back to him inevitably. But one of the clauses in the contract was that it'll only happen if Watchmen never goes out of print, and it's never gone out of print.
Oh, what an ass.
Yeah, so that's why Alan Moore hates DC, is because he feels like he has a moral right to all those characters, and he has a legal right to the characters still, but only after they go out of print.
Oh, no, and they've ruined them, dude. That last little run of Watchmen books that came out?
Yeah, that was
pretty bad. Horrible garbage.
It definitely left a taint on the titles. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, off topic.
Well, all this leads up to Legends of Tomorrow.
Okay.
And a lot of the setup for that, it was both Arrow and Flash.
Mm-hmm.
Like, both those shows helped to establish the characters that, like, I know, like, Arrow, White Canary comes from Arrow, but I think the Hawks came from the Flash, right? Because Cisco was dating, what do they call her? What's her real name, though, show? Is she Shara on the show?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, of course, I'm just curious, though.
And, of course, Captain Cold and Heatwave both come from Flash.
Really weird way he talks. Is he supposed to be gay?
The actor is.
Well, I know that. Well, I know both actors. What's the name of the villain with the fire?
Heatwave.
They both were on Prison Break together, weren't they?
I didn't realize they were both on Prison Break. I know the Wentworth Miller was definitely on that show, though.
Okay, I don't know.
I never watched Prison
Snark
Break.
Snark has this very odd way of he talks.
Did you just call him Stark?
No, Snark.
Okay, Snart.
Snart.
Lynn Snart.
I always called him Snark for some reason.
Okay. Is he snarky?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
But just the way he talks, he's very sarcastic tone, which I thought was freaking hilarious. So DC Legends.
Well, what is the show about? Because I've not seen an episode of that. It's not very old.
What happens is Vandal Savage, who appeared in
wasn't it a crossover between Flash and Green Arrow?
Yeah, that's when Hawkman and Hawkwoman appeared.
Okay.
Vandal Savage appears, and it turns out in the future, he takes over the world. He plunges the world into wars. He has all this technology. He's going around killing people. And, Rick...
Rip Hunter.
Rip Hunter. He's part of the Time Lords who watch over
time. They call them Time Lords or Time Masters?
I think they're Time Lords.
Okay, because Doctor Who's a Time Lord. And the dude who plays Rip Hunter was on one of the series of Doctor Who.
Was it Time Masters or?
Hey, he was in a
Timekeepers. I don't know. Something about time. Okay. You know, it's time travel, dude. So it's.
Do the Lanier men come into the play at all?
No, not yet. Okay. I mean, they have. So what happens is he goes before the committee and he tries to say, hey, guys, we need to go back in time and stop Vandal Savage. And they're all freaking out because they're like, no, we can't. We'll change time and it'll affect them. So then he takes it upon himself to go and find these heroes that are going to. You know, he's going to get this group of heroes together and they're going to go stop Vandal Savage and there'll be legends. And so
well, that was the big thing in the fake trailer they did for it was you're not heroes, you're legends.
Yeah.
And the fact they've got villains on the team is like, well, maybe they're going to be.
Well, see that, and that kind of all plays on the first few episodes. They drop a lot of little bombs where, you know.
Go ahead. I'm not going to watch it.
Spoilers alert. So it turns out that Rip stole the ship. He finds these heroes. He takes them. They go on a mission, and it's a total clusterfuck from day one. And they come to realize that they're not heroes, that he just picked them out. He just needed he needed someone. Apparently, he couldn't find Superman and them, but he needed someone. So he picked
Brandon Routh. Yeah. Or Routh. I don't know how you pronounce it. Well, the thing is, he's supposed to be the Atom, but I realized I tried to watch. That was one of the episodes of Arrow I watched, actually, is when he first started coming onto the series. Uh-huh. I wanted to watch it because I like the Atom. And I realized very quickly that guy he was playing was in no way the Atom.
Oh, no. This
and my understanding, huh?
This is an Exo armor with like a nerdy kid in it.
Well, my understanding is they'd already planned on using the Ted Kord Blue Beetle. And when they couldn't use Blue Beetle for some reason, they went ahead and turned the Atom into Blue Beetle. So he's supposed to be Blue Beetle, where he's this enthusiastic millionaire industrialist who becomes a vigilante and he has his.
It's a little more sense.
Yeah. So point being is he's. But Ted wasn't like naive either. He wasn't a goof or anything.
No, that was always to me. Booster Gold.
Booster wasn't particularly naive either. Actually, it sounds like a lot of what they did with Rip Hunter was borrowed from Booster Gold, where he stole a time machine and goes back through time and decides to, but he's saving himself as opposed to saving other people.
Well, no, so what happens is you find out that his family was actually killed. At the very first episode, Vandal Savage kills a little boy and a woman. It turns out it's his family.
Okay.
So he's going back in time and then they take a shot at Vandal. Hawkman gets killed, which I was surprised. And it turns out that he's linked to them and so he needs to kill the Hawk.
Yeah, there was a fella whose name
text you that day like, hey, if you were to kill Vandal and cut him into pieces and spread him out, would that work? And you're like, I don't.
Is that what they did to him in the show?
No, I'm telling you, that's the one problem I have with the show. They write it like an early issue of DC Comics, very kind of almost simplistic, cartoony. Like I know you're like you always bust my balls, but they're like, oh, we have Vandal Savage, but it can only kill them with a sword. And they kill him at one time and they run away and leave the body. And that's when I'm like, dude, I would have taken the body, cut off all his limbs, spread him across the world, and we're done. The universe is safe.
Always double tap.
Yeah, but they were like, oh, let's escape. And so she, you know, she struggles with being a Hawk girl and or Hawk woman or Hawk thingy. And it's Quantum Leap pretty much. Dude. They're like jumping through time. So they're in the 70s or like in
well,
the
they're 60s. Screwing with their own timelines is part of the problem, right?
But and they do this weird thing where like, oh, if we don't accomplish this mission, this is what the future will look like. And the last one was Firestorms. The Soviets had captured the professor and the Vandal Savage is now figuring out who these are. You find out later that Rip, his name is right.
Yeah, Rip.
Rip had tried to kill Vandal at one time and failed. So Vandal had created a secret society that worships him as God and that he kills the Hawk people and he found out if he takes their blood and passes it on to his followers, they live 100 years. Mm-hmm. They can live another 100 years. So they're devotees to him. And so he needs to kill them to draw in their power so he can keep on living. So every time he encounters them in the past, when they run into him, he remembers them. He's like, oh yeah, y'all took your shot last time. I remember. So he now realizes their powers, their potential. So he's trying to create his own versions of Firestorms with this Russian chick and a Russian scientist. And it just...
That's kind of cool though. They did stuff like that in the comics. So maybe they were taking that from the actual
and it's
comics.
Cool, but like I said, the way it's written, the dialogue is just kind of goofy a little bit. Like there's goofy moments where you could at least once or twice I've already like watched where like you could end this series right now. You just got to go dark. You know, you go dark and then you got it. But they just don't. They get really cartoony about situations. And like this last one, they told White Canary, you know, they can't get the professor. If he gets to a certain part, you have to kill him. And she's like, okay, I'll kill him. I got the shot. And because Hawk Girl and who else? Hawk Girl and oh, the other part of
the Firestorm. Yeah.
The young athlete kid. He's like,
"Oh, we can get them. You just don't have all your chess pieces on the chessboard. That's why this will fail." And I'm just like, "Oh, dude, just take the shot. Like, it's okay. You're supposed to be, because they're always so worried about affecting the future. Yet they're willing to take this wild gamble to try to overcome this great obstacle that's supposedly going to clear up the future. And every time they kind of clear up the future, and then of course you turn out later that Rip actually stole the ship, and they're sending some kind of bounty hunter after him to bring in the ship and kill all of them on board. And it's a mess, a hot mess, but it's fun so far. It's not Flash level in my book, but it's still more enjoyable than what I've seen of Arrow, and definitely what I've seen of Supergirl.
Okay.
So, and they're only, I think, like 4 or 5 episodes in. So
yeah, it's still pretty early.
It's on Hulu right now. You could watch right now and catch up, and it's good. Not great, but good.
Good enough.
Good enough, yeah. I mean, I told you, DC right now is owning TV. Except for, I don't know, that last season of S.H.I.E.L.D. was pretty good. I actually liked the last season with the whole Inhumans and the jumping through the portal.
Yeah, but that was last season. What do you feel about this season?
That was this season. Right now they're showing Agent Carter.
Right. No, but I'm saying, like, where they go through the portal and they're on the alien world. You watched all that stuff?
That was cool.
Well, they're coming back, though. The season's coming back in a few weeks.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. They're not done.
I thought the season was done.
They did the same thing last year. They maybe you didn't watch it last year. What they do is they take a hiatus and they run Agent Carter for 8 weeks or so. This time it's supposed to be 10 weeks. But since they've been doubling up on episodes, I think it's going to end up being like 6 or 7 weeks. And then S.H.I.E.L.D. comes back. S.H.I.E.L.D.'s going to run until Captain America comes out. Because that's what they did last time, is whatever happens.
Is it like 24 episodes? Or?
Yeah, it's a full season typically. Well, I don't know if it's quite 20 some odd because they have Agent Carter too.
Yeah.
But roughly the same length as any other standard season, somewhere in the proximity of 20. But yeah, what they usually do is they'll run up until the Marvel movie of the summer comes out. And they usually tie into it somehow. Mm-hmm. So like the first season, they tied into Winter Soldier and the revelation that Hydra had infiltrated S.H.I.E.L.D. And that's what made such a huge change in the first season.
Yeah.
What was the time? Oh, the second season was they revealed that they'd been building up the entire season toward Coulson getting the helicarrier that they used for the Avengers together. So the Coulson and company were the guys who actually put that helicarrier together so that Nick Fury could go up and save the people in Slovenia or wherever the fuck that place was. And then we don't know what they're going to do this time. I assume that they're going to deal in some way with the fallout of the Civil War.
Okay. Still cool. But I mean, I enjoyed the season so mm-hmm. far. I just, for some reason, I kept thinking the season was over because I did like the fact that they show where Hydra had come up with their concept of the tentacles and shit like that.
Uh-huh.
Alternate world.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a Marvel villain yet.
The guy that's come back?
Yeah. Whatever it was that.
What's inside of Ward.
Yeah.
Yeah. They haven't gone into enough detail for us to know.
I just hope.
You know, Absorbing Man's going to be on the second half of the season, though, right? Absorbing Man's coming back.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, but give him more to do. Absorbing Man needs to fight Hulk or Thor. He's
a
high level villain.
You got to admit, though, at least he did get a lot accomplished when he first turned up. He was tearing the hell out of all the people that were working around him.
Deathlock back?
I don't know. I've not heard anything about that.
I enjoyed the Deathlock run. I thought that was pretty
cool. I think he was well handled in season 2. Unless something changes in season 3, though, I don't know if I'd want to see him. Because it becomes too much like, didn't you already do that? And they just suddenly bring Deathlock back at the end of the 3rd season like they did at the end of 2nd season. It gets kind of samey. Yeah. So I think they made a point, too, where they kind of retired Deathlock for the time being.
Yeah.
So because he finally got to like be free and watch over his son and stuff. So I think they're just going to let him do that for a little while.
No. Like I said, DC Legends is pretty good.
Okay. So we watched, what's it called? Batman Assault on Arkham.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what is that? What did we just watch?
You talk about it now.
No, you tell. You're the one who knows the story more.
I just did DC Legends. It's your turn.
Yeah, but it's your movie. I would have
to watch it because we're going to go watch Suicide Squad. And so I just wanted to see if it's, you know, the Suicide Squad movie I would want to watch was animated already.
Okay. Well, the basics of this one is that you've got what looks like sort of a grindhouse opening, or maybe sort of a more general action movie opening, where you see a bunch of villains in action doing villainous stuff. And then they'll do a freeze frame of the character name as though it were like their alias, their alter ego, their real name, as though they were actors. And then they'll do another flash frame of them as such and such. So Floyd Lawton is Deadshot. And you're introduced to all these villains in this movie, and then they're all captured, and you see them meet Amanda Waller, and she explains, okay, look, you guys are all villains. I'll shorten your sentences if you go on a suicide mission for me. If you don't go on a mission for me, I'm going to kill you right now, and you have bombs implanted in your necks. If you don't do what I tell you to do during the mission, I'm going to trigger the bomb, and you're going to be dead. And one of the guys they captured was a KGB, doesn't believe her, walks out. his head blows off. And they fairly, they're not super graphically, but because it always looks like they're blowing mannequin heads off, because the heads always pop off. Like,
you did see blood, though.
You did see blood, but the heads always pop off basically intact. So it looks sort of like, it sort of looks like a mannequin head popping up out of, or like an action figure where you rip the head off the action figure, but you still have a whole head and a whole body.
What about Sharkmaster?
The Tiger Shark was the exception for sure. Yeah. But anyway, or sorry, not Tiger Shark. Tiger Shark's a name of villain. King Shark.
Was it King Shark? Okay.
Yeah. So, but you, spoilers.
No, I'm just saying, because you're like, well, they look like a mannequin. I'm like,
most of the time, though, and certainly KG Beast looks like a mannequin head popping off.
Now, did you expect that to happen?
Kind of, yeah. Because you already told me that this one was dark and it went to places you didn't expect. I was more surprised.
Damn, I should have told you it was more like a TV show.
Right. I was surprised by how often they cursed in this one. Shit is said quite often in this movie, at least 3 or 4 times. Because they got a PG-13, which gives you X number of shits.
Yeah.
Marvel does the same thing, the Marvel movies. And I was really surprised by the sexual content of the show.
Yeah.
There was a lot, like, you have characters having sex with each other. You have intimation of sexual activity. You have a lot of like using sex as a decoy or a distraction, so that you like the women are going to seduce a guard and they actually have their clothes off, and then
showing the titties.
Never get to see a full breast, but it's always sides and unders, and you know, the backside where half their ass crack is showing and half their boob is showing, but no nipples. But still much more provocative than anything I'd seen in any of the DC stuff before. Definitely violent, a lot of gunfire, a lot of blood splatters and stuff.
Like shooting dudes in the head, you would see that old blood trail.
Right. So it was definitely heavier in that respect. But the big thing is this was the Suicide Squad being adapted onto film. I think for not the first time, because they had Task Force X appear on Justice League,
call them Suicide Squad.
Their name is Task Force X.
Yeah.
The book is Suicide Squad.
I got you.
Yeah, but the group is Task Force X. Nobody's stupid enough to actually join a group called Suicide Squad. What it is, though, is it's like an informal name that they call themselves sometimes.
Okay.
We're Task Force X, but really a Suicide Squad.
Okay.
And then we all go on suicide missions. Now, what Suicide Squad stuff have you read?
You had given me a trade one time to read.
Okay, so you've read some of the John Ostrander stuff.
Yeah,
have you read any of the new 52 stuff?
No.
Okay.
I just know that apparently Waller now is like a super hot model now.
Yeah, she's totally like a babe. But I think that they were...
Jim Lee.
They started playing with her eating more in the comics. She hadn't shown the effects of that yet. But in the comics, they were playing with, hey, not really keeping to your diet there, are you? Like, they were going to make her fat.
Oh, God.
And I think now that they're debooting with Rebirth, by the time she shows up again, she should be back to her more portly self.
Okay.
She should look like a wall instead of like a pole. So as far as the actors in this one, Kevin Conroy still plays Batman.
Always.
And he's still like the definitive Batman actor. I don't care, across all media, there's never been a live action actor as good as Kevin Conroy's voice as Batman. Neil McDonough played Deadshot / Floyd Lawton. And he's the guy who plays Dum-Dum Dugan in the Marvel movies. And he's playing Damian Dark on Arrow right now. He played that asshole from that bank commercial about the guys, we're Americans, we work hard and we play hard, and you know that, you know, remember that commercial that pissed everybody off? You don't remember that one? Okay. So just to take it like character by character, Deadshot, they completely got the character wrong on this show. It completely got him wrong, because one of they've got a guy who leads the Suicide Squad, his name is Rick Flag, or actually mostly it's Rick Flag Jr., because they had set up to where the original Suicide Squad from the 1960s existed in that time period, and then they had the son of the guy from the original team lead the Suicide Squad that was the supervillains. And that's the uptight military guy who's the stiff, and he hates working with the criminals, and he calls them scumbags, and but he's like their rigid leader, right? And then Deadshot is, if Rick Flag is Rick Grimes from Walking Dead, Deadshot is more like Daryl crossed with Merle, okay? Daryl Dixon, where he's the guy who's kind of off the side. and he's kind of sarcastic and he's moody, and in his case specifically he's got a death wish. He kind of wants to die. So the reason why he goes on these Suicide Squad missions, he doesn't care he lives or dies. He's just gonna, you know, he's enjoying shooting people until he finally dies of his own self. But he talks a little shit and he's got a kind of an attitude. And later on, many years later, I think they revealed that he had a daughter, and so it kind of gave him a reason to keep living, was that he still had this daughter. But his character, he's still a villain, he's still a Batman villain, he's still kind of he's one of the more reliable members of the Suicide Squad, but he's still kind of a jerk, and he's not a good guy to work with, and he's quieter. So in this movie, there's elements of Deadshot in him, but really he's playing Rick Flag. And so that bothered me, is like that character is completely wrong as far as based on the material of the comics. Then you got this actress, Hayden Walsh, is Harley Quinn in this one. Not the actress that originated the character from Batman. Yeah. So it's kind of a weird cognitive dissonance when I hear Kevin Conroy, who's totally recognizable and who you love. And then you got this other person that kind of sounds like the real Harley, but isn't. And Deadshot in the movie, did you like the way the character as presented in the movie? Yeah, and do you think that that's what they're going to do with him in the live-action adaptation?
No, man, Will Smith's playing him, that he's going to be this tortured anti-hero. He's always kind of been a hero, but he just goes about it the wrong way type shit.
Okay.
Like Punisher light.
Yeah, and you liked Harley Quinn from the cartoons.
Yeah.
Okay. What did you think of Harley Quinn on this cartoon?
Highly charged sexually.
Yeah, she got naked a lot, and she was partially... I mean, it's funny because...
She bit off a human ear.
Yeah, that was dark.
She was... I told you, that was the Harley Quinn I thought would be in the movie. She's dark. She's a killer. Like in watching this, and like I told you before, it made sense why she's on the team, because they're like, you have all these.
We gotta say the plot of the movie is that the Riddler is taunting Amanda Waller at the beginning of the cartoon. And Waller is sending in a strike team to capture or kill the Riddler. And the strike team is intercepted by Batman, who's there to capture Riddler as well. And he takes out the attack squad and he puts the Riddler in Arkham Asylum. And so Waller is putting together a team to go after the Riddler, because the Riddler has something that she wants. And the only way to get at it is to get to the Riddler. So the squad is intended to infiltrate Arkham Asylum. And so somebody who was formerly a doctor there, who knows the layout of the place very well, both as in a professional capacity and as an inmate herself, so they need her to help get them into Arkham Asylum.
So it made sense for her to be on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see that in the movie. I think it's just like, oh, she's the most popular thing right now to throw in the movie. But that's for another time.
Yeah, see, off the page, we were talking about how Harley Quinn is the Deadpool of DC Comics. Yeah. So,
in this animated movie, it made sense. She's violent. She's deadly. She's on the team because she knows the layout. So she can lead them through Arkham without any problems. So I enjoyed that aspect of it. I thought it was kind of weird, you know, in a way she's still protective, trying to kill him, everybody. She's not creating a way for him to escape. I mean, I thought that was great when she saw him.
Well, I don't think that was intentional, though.
I think so.
I don't know. I don't think she planned that. I don't buy that.
I think so.
Okay. Well, anyhow, obviously Harley Quinn got her start in Batman the Animated Series, and she was a henchwoman of the Joker, who had a great voice actress, who kind of took on a life of her own, started appearing in actual DC Comics. She ported over from the cartoons to the comics. She had her own series that ran for a couple or 3 years, where it was fairly true to the characters interpreted in the animated series. And then a number of years ago, DC decided to more sexualize the character, to have her run around in more revealing outfits, and to treat her more as a solo character where she was expected to kind of carry her own stories. And specifically 5 years ago in the New 52, they made her the featured character in their new version of the Suicide Squad, which was one of the more successful books of the New 52. But specifically the popularity of Harley Quinn in this new form, where she was more violent, more proactive, and then more sexualized, became very popular. And she spun off her own ongoing series, which was one of the only things that DC can sell. It's like their number 2 thing after Batman, maybe number 3 with Justice League, I'm not sure, but really high up there. And now they keep spinning out all these spinoff series, like Harley Quinn's Black Book, and she had a Harley Quinn and Power Girl miniseries, and they're constantly trying to put out more and more Harley Quinn stuff, because Harley Quinn is to DC what Deadpool is to Marvel, this violent, comedic character with sexual fluidity that's just brought in audiences, new audiences, is at a time when comics desperately needs it and very rarely can get it. So Harley Quinn is like the biggest thing in DC right now. And this cartoon reflects the New 52 Suicide Squad to a large degree, but specifically it reflects something that more resembles the New 52 Harley Quinn versus the cartoons. That said, I hated Harley Quinn in this cartoon. I didn't like the voice actress. It bothered me that she was close enough to where she kind of sounded like the Harley Quinn from the cartoons, but was clearly not the same actress, clearly wasn't as good. I wasn't so much concerned about her sexual liberation. It's a major plot point that she is infatuated or she's interested in and eventually seduces Deadshot. And that causes complications that affect the whole rest of the movie. But the fact that she's still defined by who she's sleeping with, all of her actions are defined by her relationships to Deadshot or to the Joker, and her heel turn over the course of the cartoon to where she ends up becoming not only a subordinate to the Joker again, but also she has this fight scene with Batman and he kicks her ass pretty easily while the Joker is, his physicality is overstated and he's giving a good fight to Deadshot. I hated how she was played in this movie. I thought she was annoying. I hated, like, none of her lines were funny to me. I didn't really need to see her bite some random woman's ear off. That didn't do anything for me. The thing that really hated, though, was the Yahtzee.
Yeah.
Like, they're trying to give her a catchphrase, and even the Joker says it at one point, that every time he said that, it just, like, nails on chalkboard to me. I hated that.
Welcome
and I just,
to my world.
And I just, so, your reaction to Margot Robbie's interpretation in the movie, the live-action movie, is the way I'm reacting to this animated Harley Quinn. I freaking hate her. But she was still hot. I won't deny that, like, as drawn in the cartoon, she looked good. Well, that's one thing that was weird about this cartoon is the women were all like kind of muscular. They were kind of like tight. Like they all looked sort of like Sarah Connor. They were all like Sarah Connor. So, but they all had like ridiculous stripper breasts. And they were constantly getting put into situations that would emphasize their sexuality. So there was that element where it's like, she's kind of butch to be doing this stuff, but it still looked good. And as just at a base level, it's like, hey, I'm enjoying looking at these naked chicks running around in this cartoon. So I will opt to that. Okay, so you got this fellow Matthew Gray Goobler as the Riddler. I don't know who that guy is, and I didn't really love his Riddler voice. But the Riddler, again, has a fairly key role to play later in the episode. He starts the movie, and he's very important later on. But I thought that the character as written was okay. I just didn't like the voice acting on him very much. Yeah. Okay, so Troy Baker plays the Joker. I thought that it was Hamill. I didn't realize he did a really good Mark Hamill impersonation. Yeah. But everything else, he did a really good impersonation. I didn't realize it wasn't Hamill. I thought that the Joker was written fairly well in the movie. I liked his design was okay. I didn't so much like the whole bleached white thing that they did with him for much of the movie. And he was maybe a little too goth Joker in his design. Well, my issue was when he's fighting Deadshot and he's working the knives and stuff, there was way too much Keith Ledger in that. And he was fucking kung fu fighting. I just don't think the Joker should be a kung fu fighter. That bothered me a lot.
I've never
believed in the whole he's crazy, so he's unpredictable and Batman can't fight. It was like, no, he's a scrawny little geek. So no, that part bugged me, but I thought the Joker was reasonably well handled. CCH Pounder is so perfect as Amanda Waller. I do think they made her too tall, though. I mean, she looked like Michael Clark Duncan, you know, in this movie a lot of the time. I'm glad she's fat. I'm glad she does look like a freaking wall. But she was enormous in this. I just wish that she had been squat like she was in the comic. She was so tall that she looked like Arnold Schwarzenegger. She looked like Arnold Schwarzenegger in the fat suit from Total Recall. I kept waiting for her head to like separate on. She was just too tall. If she'd been smaller, and I think that her head was a little weird proportioned to the rest of her body. But I did really appreciate that she was big, and I love that CCH Pounder did the voice again because she's great as the voice of Amanda Waller. Greg Ellis was Captain Boomerang. Captain Boomerang was a guy with an Australian accent. He was totally a guy with an Australian accent in this movie. Yeah, I didn't really like the way they handled Deadshot that much. He was okay, but they just didn't capture the particular charms of Captain Boomerang from the comics. That he's just such a little scuzzy ass, and he doesn't do things that show, like, he's the scumbag scumbag. He's the guy that even the guys who are in the Suicide Squad can't stand because he's just too without morals and too untrustworthy. And I don't think they quite capture that. All they did is they just had him keep having fights with Deadshot, and they just both started getting on my nerves after a while. Black Spider was played by Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad. Yeah. Well, yeah, you can. What did you see him in? Okay, going back there. Okay. I didn't know that that was him. Black Spider's... Huh? Okay. I didn't know that that was him. It was good voice acting, though. You can tell it was him? Okay. I like the acting on the character. I thought Black Spider was really cool in this one. I'm not terribly familiar with him from the comics. I always loved his costume from the 80s incarnation. And then they did some more modern one that Kelly Jones did that I didn't care for. I don't remember if Black Spider was a vigilante killer in the comics or not, because I just didn't read enough Black Spider appearances. He was killed off, I think, in one of his earliest appearances when he was first created in the 80s. And then when they brought him back in the 90s as a different guy, I didn't pay much attention to him. But as he was using the cartoon, I thought Black Spider was really cool. I thought he... I'm trying not to say every single person that dies.
Dude, this is all number spoiler.
Okay.
Spoiler episode.
Mm-hmm. I do appreciate, though, that they were really willing. See, I knew that they were using a lot of like lower class villains in this movie, but I still didn't expect them to kill so many of the members of this team. I mean, they just had no seeming reservations. I'm still not 100% convinced that, well, I don't know if Killer Frost made it or not, because I think the last time we see her, she's in a cop car that's flying through the air and smashed into a wall. So we never see an actual body, but she's not actually doing anything at the end, and she doesn't appear again. So I don't know if she lived or not. But virtually everybody else in the Suicide Squad is killed before the movie's done with. Can you get any more actors? Do you have any more actors? No, okay. Boomerang survived. He was left amongst the people who were trying to escape. Okay. Well, so Killer Frost, I don't know who played her. It was my favorite incarnation of that character, because there's been three different villainesses called Killer Frost. My favorite is Louise Lincoln, so I was glad they used her. I liked the way she looked in the costume. I liked the character design. My only problem was the voice actress didn't bring a lot to it, but she also didn't have a lot to work with, because that character didn't have very much dialogue. And I didn't like that weird sexual tension between her and King Shark.
No, she was using her.
Yeah, but it was still weird. I didn't like that. That was weird to me. And then King Shark is a guy who fights Superboy, so he's really kind of beyond the power level of a lot of the people that are in this show. Although it did show that he was really powerful. I mean, he's bulletproof and he's Flash and stuff. He was really dumb. He was dumb on the cartoon. He wasn't a bright guy. That thing, you mean the thing where he runs the previous day's footage so that they don't... Okay. I kept thinking that King Shark, the way they were handling him, that they might as well have just had Killer Croc until his head explodes, and it's like, oh, that's why they didn't use Killer Croc, because they needed somebody who they could kill. But he was basically just doing sort of like the animated series version of Killer Croc. Not the version I like, the animated series version where he's kind of a big, doofy, muscular dude. Why... I did not like that they redesigned Alfred, who appears only like one time in the show, but he doesn't look anything like Alfred. And he's got he doesn't have the mustache. I guess they were trying to make him look like Michael Caine. Just that didn't work for me at all. Yeah, that guy didn't work at all either. The design wasn't great either. But overall, I really liked the animation. I liked the character designs overall. I liked the lighting. I liked that this was a much more like muscular take. It's not the Timverse stuff. It looks more like something from anime. It looks, and not just any anime, but like the really cool ones where they actually have like sculpted figures, where they're not in any way looking like cartoons, where they look like comic books come to life. But it was such a bloodthirsty movie, though. So needlessly bloodthirsty. I like Suicide Squad, and I know that the comic books, they are very violent, but usually they're going to like other countries and they're like toppling governments, or they're doing black ops stuff against other spies and soldiers. These guys are in a domestic it's domestic warfare. They're in an asylum. All the people that are getting killed, and by the way, I don't believe that an asylum has a budget to have its own personal army. Maybe it's Arkham. But these are just guys. They're like citizens of Gotham City who work at the asylum, and they're getting killed left and right. Blood's all over the place. They have no compunction about killing these guys. They're not even cops. They're just security guards and stuff. These guys didn't do anything wrong, so I really feel bad for how many people get killed in this freaking movie. It's just so over unnecessary. And it was a very mean-spirited movie overall. I thought it was okay. I liked it better earlier on. I liked it when you had more character moments. I did really enjoy the design work. work. The sexuality kind of wore on after a while. It's like, okay, enough. We get it. You can be PG-13 sex. But it seemed like they kept belaboring it needlessly. And just the level of violence, the sheer amount of carnage, and it just felt too long. If it had been a good, like, 30, 45 minute cartoon, I think I would have liked it. But going over an hour, they had a lot of complications to keep the story going, and they were reasonable complications. But just the violence and also the Joker, why do we have to have Batman and the Joker in this thing? I really wish they just let it be a Suicide Squad story. It's part of the selling point, but that bothered me too. But it just was overly mean-spirited. I don't think they needed to kill all those poor working men, you know? Would you like to contribute anything? You liked it.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you like to elaborate on things you did like about it? You don't think it'll be as dark as this? As opposed to a shy sociopath with knives?
Will Smith.
Conflicted? Reluctant?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But when he tells them, let's go save the world, I'm like, ugh. I just always pictured him as more like worried about him, his own, and fuck everybody else. So that's why I asked, watching it, let me know how close they are. In this one, I got a sense that he didn't care about anything but kid. He didn't care about the first team, you know, all that mattered to him, kid, and Ben. Besides that, I enjoyed all the characters. I thought, I like the fact that the whole point of going into our kill was not much to get close to
Get the mic a little closer to you.
So, besides that, I liked it. I own it.
DC Nation.
We got Facebook likes from Keith G. Baker and Siskoid, and Twitter love from Adam Blackmoon, Ann Labs, Art of Selfie, Coffee and Comics Blog, Count Druncula, Dead as Hell, Dr. G. Nerdologist, The Fire and Water Podcast Network, Firestorm Fan, Carl Disley, Keith G. Baker, Let's Talk Shazam, Luke Dobwalker, Michael Bailey Podcasts, Professor Riptide, Rob at Speculum Fight,
Ew.
Siskoid, Stella at Batgirl Oracle Podcast, Synod Alias Scarecrow, Too Dangerous for a Girl Blog, and Trucker Talk. Keith G. Baker wrote, no cussing. Boo. If there's ever a time for cussing, it's in discussion about DC Comics. Well, fuck, I agree. Let's curse some more. Siskoid wrote, hate to side with Frank, but after rolling my eyes at the movie Suicide Squad, this last trailer made it seem like it was a lot of fun. Something that's sadly missing in the DC movie verse of late. A DC movie that's been both good and fun? We'd have to go back to crap, I don't know. So we'll have to see if Suicide Squad checks both those boxes. I do hope that despite the look of the thing, it borrows more from Australia than it does the current incarnation. The preceding program is a non-profit fan production. Any copyrighted materials contained therein are believed borrowed under fair use with no copyright infringement intended. Please feel free to leave comments at the Rolled Spine Productions WordPress blog. You can also send us Twitter comments through the Rolled Spine Podcast Twitter. Thank you for listening.